used for? They're really only used for a couple things. They're used for three things. Nope. They're used for urine retention to make a person pee more. They're used in slowed down peristalsis, GI motility. They're used to speed up the gut. And they're used for glaucoma. That's it. How many drugs do you need to know?
None.
There's an antagonist or agonist?
That's agonists. Muscarinic agonists. Do you really want to ask that question?
No, but I mean, okay.
Because the reason is because they're uncommon and it's worthless for us to make you remember something you're probably never going to get or never see.
So urine retention and what else?
They're used for urine retention, GI slowing, and glaucoma.
GI slowing?
Yeah, when the GI gut is slow, we use it to speed it up. We use it in urinary retention to make them pee. And there's no drugs we need to remember. Now, the next one is muscarinic antagonists or anticholinergics. Now, these block the effects of acetylcholine at glands and at muscle. So they cause a bunch of different effects. What different effects do they cause? Say again? Okay, they block sweating. They block GI motility, so they'll slow down the GI tract. They will cause urine retention, so we can use them to treat incontinence. They'll cause the heart to speed up. And then they'll also cause decreased gland secretions kind of throughout the body. So less tear duct, less salivary duct, less GI secretion. They will dilate the eye, so we can use them for surgery, eye surgery. Then they'll cause bronchodilation and decreased bronchial secretion, so we can use them in asthma and COPD. Now, the drugs that you need to know, the number one that kind of does everything is called atropine. Now, the major, major, major use of atropine that we're going to think about is related to the heart. And what does it do to the heart? Speeds it up. What does it do to the contractility of the heart?
Nothing.
What does it do to the contractility of the heart?
Nothing.
What does it do to the contractility of the heart? Nothing. I'm going to ask you a question on the midterm, and the answer is? All it does is raise heart rate. So we use it to treat or prevent bradycardia. Now, oxybutynin and talteridine, ditropan and ditrol, are used to treat incontinence. That's all you need to know. Talteridine and oxybutynin. Scopolamine, we use to cause sedation, and we use it to treat motion sickness. The only reason you need to know that is because people can get this over the counter and when they go on a cruise. Ipratropium and tiotropium, it's not on here, you need to know that the opiums are used to treat lung problems, asthma and COPD, tiotropium. Dicyclamine is used to treat cramping and diarrhea and IBS, because it slows down the gut. Now, as a whole, what are the anticholinergic side effects that we want to think about? What did we say it did to glands?
Dry mouth.
Dry mouth, dry eyes, dry skin. Okay. So if a person can't sweat, they're going to be not dehydrated, hot. So they're going to have hot skin. All right, so the patient will be hot, hot as a hare, mad as a hatter, causes dementia, or can cause dementia. Hot as a hare, mad as a hatter, dry as a bone, blind as a bat, because they can't focus on close objects. And their heart rate could go too high. All right, cholinesterase inhibitors. What do cholinesterase inhibitors do? They inhibit cholinesterase. That's very good. And what does that do to acetylcholine? It increases the amount of acetylcholine. So we're going to use this for two reasons. We're going to use it to treat myasthenia gravis. What drug? Neostigmine. So it increases the amount of acetylcholine at what area? What's the problem in myasthenia gravis? Okay, muscle what? Okay, it's going to be muscular weakness because our body has been destroying neuromuscular junctions. Now, neuromuscular junctions need acetylcholine to tell them what to do. So what we do is we turn up the volume on whatever neuromuscular junctions are left.
So it works at the junctions.
So it works at the junctions. Now, the side effects of neostigmine are the side effects of too much acetylcholine. So it's going to be the opposite of the anticholinergics. What are the side effects then? So decreased heart rate, too much sweating, too much saliva, and GI cramps. Maybe peeing too much. Oh yeah, I forgot. With the anticholinergics, you also need to remember constipation and urinary retention. Now, in the case of someone who's incontinent, that's a good thing, right? Right. All right. The other drug that we have in the cholinesterase inhibitors is physostigmine. What do we use physostigmine for? Well, it does cross the blood-brain barrier. You need to know that. But what do we use it for? If it's the opposite of anticholinergics, could we use it to treat anticholinergic poisoning or overdose? So if we give someone too much atropine, we could give them physostigmine to counteract it. Now, if a person has too much neostigmine, what can we give them to counteract the too much neostigmine? Atropine. All right. So each one will treat the other's overdose. Neuromuscular blockers, we use them for anesthesia. What does it do to a person's consciousness? Nothing. Person is still awake. There's two types of neuromuscular blockers, and don't twitch and do twitch. But what are they called? How does a neuron send a message down the axon? What? Okay, it's called an action potential, but what happens? Okay, how does it start? We have a pump that's pumping blank out and blank in. Sodium out, potassium in. And then we have channels that open up and allow
depolarizing and polarizing.
Okay, depolarizing and polarizing. You love it. All right, catecholamines. Catecholamines activate what kind of receptors? Catecholamines activate what kind of receptors? Alpha 1, beta 1, beta 2, beta, alpha 2. So alpha 1 and 2, beta 1 and 2. They don't all do it equally, though. And collectively, those four receptors are called adrenergic receptors or sympathetic receptors. All right, so epinephrine, you need to know not necessarily everything, but we need to know the major uses of epinephrine. So the major uses of epinephrine are... Okay, we don't use it to speed up heart rate by itself. We use atropine for that. But if a person's got cardiac arrest, their heart has stopped beating, we can use epinephrine to bring them back from the dead. What else do we use epinephrine from? Okay, anaphylactic reactions. We use it to prevent anaphylactic shock or to treat anaphylactic shock. How do you give it? Subcutaneously. All right, we can use it to treat what we call status asthmaticus, when a person had an asthma attack for 20 minutes or longer that does not respond to normal treatment. What do we give? Epinephrine, what way? Same way, subcutaneously. You can also use it to treat asthma, but it's kind of dangerous to do that. We don't really do that very much anymore. But it can be used for that. But don't worry about it. Don't write that one down because it's not normal anymore. So far we've got cardiac arrest, anaphylactic shock, status asthmaticus. We can also add it to anesthetics. What does it do when we add it to lidocaine? Less bleeding, less drug needed, and last longer. We should typically not use or use with caution in what parts of the body? Fingers, nose, penis, and toes. What are the risks or adverse effects of epinephrine? Vasoconstriction, which can cause two things to happen. One is necrosis and the other is, you got it, elevated blood pressure. Those are the two biggest risks. Norepinephrine. Norepinephrine, we really are only going to use in shock and heart failure. We're going to use it to increase heart rate and increase contractility, and it also will cause vasoconstriction, which will increase blood pressure. So we're going to use it in heart failure and shock. Dopamine can be used in heart failure and shock, and it can also be used to increase renal perfusion. And dobutamine, we only use for shock. Well, all right, it can be used for heart failure, but it's very uncommon. So the main thing you need to know is shock. We also use it for certain stress tests. If a person can't walk on a treadmill to get their heart rate up, we can give them dobutamine to increase the work of the heart to do the stress test. Sympathomimetics, we've got two. Pseudoephedrine and phenylephrine. What do we use them for? Nasal congestion. What are the side effects? Nope. It's the opposite. Make you jumpy. Now, there are some people who have what we call paradoxical reactions to any drug, and that's the opposite. So there'll be some people, you give them Sudafed, it puts them to sleep. There are some people, you give them morphine, and it makes them hopped up and wired. Those are called paradoxical effects. But generally speaking, Sudafed and phenylephrine make a person alert, unable to sleep. And what does it do to their blood pressure? Makes it go up. Pseudoephedrine is more restricted in Florida now because it can be used to create amphetamines. All right, alpha-1 antagonists. You can cross out everything except trazosin and phentolamine because those are the only two that I'm going to test you on. So alpha 1 blockers, what do we use tranexamic for? All right, well, how do alpha 1 blockers work? What do they do? Okay, they block alpha 1. That's great. Now, what does that do? Okay, relaxes the urethra, relaxes the arteries, and so we use it to treat what two big things? We can use it to treat high blood pressure, causes vasodilation. We can also use it to treat what else can we, oh, okay, got it. What else can we use it to treat? Say again?
The urethra
and the arteries. So if it relaxes the urethra, we can use it to treat benign prostatic hyperplasia, BPH. What? No, no. The one that stops pregnancy is a beta one. I don't think I make you know it. Yeah. But that would be terbutaline is what you're thinking of. And that activates beta 2. So alpha 1 blockers, we use them to treat high blood pressure and BPH. Notice that men are going to be the number one users of alpha 1 blockers, not women, because women do not have prostates. Now, what do we use phentolamine for? What were the risks of epinephrine, using epinephrine in lidocaine? Tissue necrosis. Now, if a person has tissue necrosis because you've given them epinephrine and it's activating alpha 1s, how would we stop that? We would give them an alpha blocker to relax it. And that alpha 1 blocker would be phentolamine. Yeah. Prevent necrosis within too much vasoconstriction. And the two major risks of too much vasoconstriction are epinephrine toxicity and is there a phenomena where people start vasoconstricting typically in the extremities? Their hands are cold and pale. Raynaud's syndrome. So phentolamine can be used for Raynaud's syndrome and for epinephrine toxicity. Now, the two sources of epinephrine toxicity, what are they? Okay, one is giving epinephrine. What's the other one? Making too much epinephrine. And how would your body make too much epinephrine? Think kindergarten cop. It's not a tumor. Cancer. A cancer of the adrenal gland. And the cancer of the adrenal gland that releases epinephrine is called pheochromocytoma. All right, so alpha 1 blockers, tranexamic, blood pressure, and BPH. Phentolamine, prevent necrosis from Raynaud and epinephrine. And the two sources of epinephrine, too much epinephrine, are giving it and making it from a cancer, the pheochromocytoma. All right, for the beta antagonists, beta blockers, cross out pindolol, nadolol. You don't need to know those. The two you need to know are propranolol and carvedilol. Propranolol is the oldest one, and it's still in fairly common use, but it's not as common anymore. Carvedilol is used only for heart failure. Then the selective ones, we have two, metoprolol and atenolol. Atenolol is only used for blood pressure. Metoprolol is used for heart failure and blood pressure. Got it? Side effects of beta blockers in general. How do beta blockers work? They block beta. Okay. All right, smart aleck. So what does beta do? What does beta 1 do? Inotropic, chronotropic, and dromotropic. It's great that you know those words. Now, what do they mean? All right, so ino is contractility, chrono is heart rate, and dromo is conductance. Now, when we block... Say again?
I thought ino was...
No, chrono, like chronic.
Okay, so ino
is... Ino is contraction.
Contraction.
Yeah, by the way, you need to know those words for the midterm.
And chrono is the heart rate. So what's the last one?
Conductance, electrical conductance. SA, AV node, that kind of stuff. All right. Now, in beta blockers, are we speeding those things up or slowing them down?
Slowing them down.
So, what are the side effects of beta blockers?
Bradycardia.
That's the slowing of the heart rate. What can lowering contraction do? Lower blood pressure, so a person can become hypotensive. It could also lower the cardiac output, so they can actually get heart failure. And what about the dromotropic? What about conductance? If we slow down conductance, what can we cause?
That's
what we call heart block. Have you ever sent someone an email and they say, "I never got it"? Okay, the email was blocked. It was never received. Heart block. The electrical signal was sent, but it was never received. All right. Before we give a beta blocker, what do we have to do? Okay, we should check their blood pressure, but how does it actually work? Does it lower blood pressure directly? No. What does it lower directly? I know chrono and dromo.
It lowers the conductivity.
Conductivity, contractility, and heart rate. Now, which one of those can we measure directly?
Heart rate.
So immediately, right before you give your beta blocker, what are you going to check? The heart rate. If their heart rate is low, what are you going to do? You're going to hold the medication. Now, some physicians and some sources will say if it's less than 50, you don't give it. Others will say less than 60. So for our purposes, we'll say less than 60 because that way we don't have to remember another number. So under 60, we're going to hold it or at least call, you know, at least do something. As you get more experience, it might change. But for now, if it's less than 60, you're not going to give it. And before you give beta blockers, you should always immediately check heart rate. And the way you're supposed to do it is not by... You're supposed to do the apical pulse. All right. Indirect antagonists. The only one we need to know is clonidine. What's the major use for clonidine?
Lower blood pressure.
Does it work really well?
Yes.
Yes. What's the problem?
It's
short acting and it can cause rebound hypertension. It can cause drowsiness and low blood pressure. All right. Done with neuro. Not so hard, was it? All right. Local anesthetics. Lidocaine. What you need to know about lidocaine is that it can decrease pain sensation, but it can also decrease all sensation, and it can also decrease motor function. How does it work?
It decreases
pain sensation, but it can decrease all sensation. It can also decrease motor function. Now, how does it work? It blocks the nerve. How does it block the nerve? Does it chop it in half? It blocks sodium channels. If sodium can't come into the neuron, it can't do what was that word again, Arla? If sodium can't come into the, it can't depolarize. All right, cocaine. What's cocaine's claim to fame? It is also a very powerful vasoconstrictor. It's often used in what kind of surgeries? Ear, nose, throat surgeries. All right, analgesics. Morphine. You need to know morphine in a lot of detail. So the itch that it causes, itching, that it causes biliary colic, that it can cause nausea, all that stuff you need to know about morphine. Now, generally speaking, all opioids, how do they work? Okay, they bind to opioid receptors and cause what effects? What do they all cause? All right, they all reduce pain. What? No, you keep saying
euphoria.
Okay, they can all cause euphoria. What else can they all cause? They can all cause drowsiness or mental clouding. What else can they all cause? Respiratory depression. And what else can they all cause? They don't cause the heart to slow. They can all cause constipation. What else? What's the other excretory function? They can all cause retained urine. And there's one more thing. That's not all. That's only morphine. So what else? I'm having a hard time seeing you guys. Meiosis. All right, so those are the major effects of all opioids. Constricting. So what are you going to do for that person for constricted pupils?
Bright light.
All right, now, in addition to all of those things, what's the one thing that morphine has that's very special? And you said it a second ago. Okay, orthostatic hypotension. But that's an effect of what it does. What is it that morphine does that can cause the orthostatic hypotension? Venous pooling. So it caused the veins to relax, which in turn caused more blood to go into the veins, less in the arteries, lowers blood pressure a little bit because of that, lowers cardiac output. It can cause orthostatic hypotension. That's special for morphine. All right, now, some of the other things that are considerations. Some opioids will also cause some other side effects, and in particular, morphine can cause biliary colic, nausea, and itching.
What is
morphine? Morphine, especially.
Biliary colic, itching,
and nausea. Not all of them are going to produce those in the same amount. Some won't produce it at all. All right, so fentanyl. What do we need to know about fentanyl? It's a transdermal patch. Who do we typically use it in? Cancer patients, patients who have had a long time to build up tolerance. Meperidine, also known as Demerol. What's its major advantage? Very little itching, very little nausea, very little biliary colic. What's its major problem? Your liver turns it into poison. So if you give it to a person long enough, it'll build up to toxic levels in your blood. So we only use Demerol for short periods of time. Oxymorphone, hydromorphone, sufentanil, lofentanil, and alfentanil, you just need to recognize those as strong opioids. And I'm going to tell you right now that I don't think that... I think oxymorphone and hydromorphone might make an appearance on your test as needing to be recognized, but I'm pretty sure the others don't. Methadone. You need to know that methadone is used to treat heroin addiction. Codeine What you need to know about codeine is that it's moderate, and that it's it could actually be strong, but you can't give enough of it to make a person have strong relief because it causes too many side effects. Codeine. So codeine is moderate. Oxycodone, you need to know that oxy and hydrocodone are artificial codeines. And you need to know about OxyContin. Why do we use OxyContin? Say again? It lasts longer, but why would we use it instead of a short acting? Because we don't have to give as many pills.
And it's
continuous release, so it controls long-term pain better. Now, what's the major problem with OxyContin? Stupid people who break it up, chew it, or people actually try and dissolve it in liquid and inject it into their veins. So, and what's the problem with it? What's the problem in doing that? Okay. So you're getting a 12-hour dose all at once. And if you haven't built up, what's that T word? Tolerance, it can kill you. Yeah, not you, yeah. Propoxyphene, what do we need to know about propoxyphene? It's crap. Don't give it, especially to what kind of patients? Elderly patients. Because it's like giving... Say again? It'll probably be more diplomatic. Actually, it'll be the physician prescribes propoxyphene, and what do you do about it? All right. Naloxone or Narcan, what do we need about Narcan? It's the antidote to opioid overdose, and we give it in what cases? When would we give it to a person? How do I know that this person needs to have an antidote? They just look like they're having too much fun. I can't let that go on. How do we know? What's the side effect of morphine that kills people? Out of all of those side effects we talked about, which is the one that kills people? What killed Heath Ledger? Okay, the respiratory depression. So respiratory depression is what causes death. So how do we know a person needs to have the antidote? Okay, so low respirations, below what level? Below 6. So below 12, what do we do? Not give them the next dose. Below 6, antidote.
Oh, then if it's below 12 and unresponsive.
Right. If they're below 12 and unresponsive, then you also give them the antidote. All right, tramadol. All you need to know about tramadol is that it affects opioid receptors, but it's not really an opiate. I'm not sure if there's a question on there about that or not. But that's what you need to know. Aspirin, you need to know a lot of detail about aspirin. How does it work? Well, how do NSAIDs in general work? They inhibit. It's right below it. COX. So they inhibit COX-1 and COX-2. So inhibiting COX-2 reduces inflammation. Inhibiting COX-1 inhibits platelets. So the platelet aggregation, what else does it inhibit? It inhibits the mucus lining of the stomach. And some other things, but those are the big three. So the lining of the stomach, that's going to be the major cause of our side effects, GI bleeding and ulcers. Inhibiting COX-2, inflammation, is going to be the major way that we get the good stuff. And inhibiting platelets is how aspirin can cause or can be used to treat heart attacks and stroke. All right. For the COX inhibitors, I think ibuprofen, indomethacin, and ketorolac are the ones that you're going to need to know for this test. Ibuprofen, indomethacin, and ketorolac, or toradol. You'll also need to know Celebrex, celecoxib. By the way, I'll give you both names if it's not a common name thing. So I'll say celecoxib, and in parentheses, Celebrex. Now, for aspirin, I'm not going to say aspirin, Bayer aspirin. For acetaminophen, I'm not going to say acetaminophen, Tylenol. Because acetaminophen, it should be common enough that you should just know what it is. For acetaminophen, you need to know the detail. What does it do differently than COX inhibitors? So, all COX inhibitors, what are the three things they do? Aspirin is the only one that we use for platelet aggregation, but in general, so reduce fever, reduce pain, reduce inflammation. Now, out of those three, what does Tylenol not do? It doesn't do the inflammation. You better know that. You're probably going to have a quiz question or a test question that's going to have a patient who's got an inflammatory disorder. They're going to say, what's the better drug for this person, Tylenol or an NSAID? What's the other thing we need to know about acetaminophen? What's the max safe dose? 4,000 per day. Now, notice, remember on the quiz there was a question where you had to calculate the number of pills they had gotten and make sure it was safe? Okay, you're going to have to do that again most likely. Very simple math, but you need to know how to do it. Say again? The normal pill is 325, the extra strength pill is 500. What's the normal dose of aspirin? 325. What's the low dose of aspirin? 81. What do we use to prevent heart attack and stroke? 81. What do we use to treat a heart attack? Regular, 325. All right. Cortisone and hydrocortisone. What is hydrocortisone? Artificial what? Artificial cortisol. So what's its strength relative to cortisol? The same, 1:1. Is it relatively short or relatively long acting? Relatively short acting. Now, the difference between hydrocortisone and cortisone is that if you give a person cortisone, their body will turn it into hydrocortisone. So they're basically the same thing. We use them to treat Addison's disease, which is when your body doesn't produce enough cortisol, and we also use it for some anti-inflammatory purposes. Other steroids. The ones you're going to need to know for this midterm is probably going to be prednisone, methylprednisolone, and beta and dexamethasone. You're not going to need to know triamcinolone for this test. Beta and dexamethasone. And all you need to know about those is that their strength. Now, dexamethasone we use for nausea, especially in cancer. Beta we use for neonates to make their lungs mature. Methylprednisolone can be given PO, but it's usually in the hospital going to be given IV. And prednisone is the one we're going to give orally. Immunosuppressants, cyclosporin and tacrolimus belong to what class? All right, well, how do they work? They suppress, okay. Yes, they are immunosuppressants, but how do they work? What do they suppress? When a T cell gets activated, what does it have to do? Proliferate. So, what tells it to proliferate? A chemical. All right, now, tacrolimus and cyclosporin inhibit the chemical that creates the chemical that tells T cells to proliferate. So, if you don't want to know the chemical, what? No, you're thinking of cyclooxygenase, which is COX.
Okay.
So it's calcineurin. Calcineurin is the enzyme that produces interleukin 2. Interleukin 2 is what tells the T cells to proliferate. So by inhibiting calcineurin with cyclosporine or tacrolimus, we inhibit T cell proliferation. Now, the major thing you need to know is those two drugs inhibit T cell proliferation. Major side effect of these two drugs: increased in infection. Azathioprine works by what drug class does it belong to? Cytotoxic drugs. It kills what kind of cells? Okay, but why does it kill B and T cells? What are they doing that makes it kill them? Rapidly produced cells. So it'll kill any cell that's rapidly reproducing. So it'll also kill skin cells and male reproductive cells, because those are always reproducing as well. Methotrexate is similar. It does the same kind of thing, but we don't typically use it for immunosuppressant in the typical sense of the word. We usually use it for cancer and also for rheumatoid arthritis. Cyclosporine, tacrolimus, and azathioprine, what's the major use for them? Transplant rejection. How do we know our transplant patient is rejecting the organ? Fever. When they have the fever, what's the drug that we're going to increase the dose of? Say again? No. They've got a fever because their body is attacking the new organ. So how are we going to tell it to stop attacking it? What's the one drug that we're going to like super high increase the dose? Methylprednisolone. So we're going to use the steroid is what we're going to increase the dose of. So Arla's got a new kidney. Her name is now Gary Coleman. She's going to be on either cyclosporine or tacrolimus. Plus, she's going to be on methylprednisolone or prednisone, and she's probably going to be on azathioprine too. Now, yeah, she had surgery 2 days ago. She gets a fever. Which of those drugs are we going to increase? The methylprednisolone, and we're going to increase it from like a level of like 60 milligrams up to 1,000. Okay, so you need to be able to recognize a hot, super high dose of methylprednisolone is used to treat fever in the transplant rejection.
So there's four drugs that would be used for the transplant?
Cyclosporine or tacrolimus.
Okay, so it's one
or the other.
And then
a steroid and maybe azathioprine. We are almost there. The fluids, we already went over in a lot of detail. We already went over the treatments for potassium. And we talked about magnesium and calcium. So you're done in terms of medications. So let's have some lunch, and then let's go back to work. You guys have been just like nonstop all morning.